Boa tarde, caros colegas. Vamos iniciar agora
Good afternoon, dear colleagues. We're going to start a new panel dedicated to cybersecurity. Cybersecurity is one of the Commission's main priorities in a digital and connected Europe, and one which should be given particular importance by all parliaments and societies. On 16 December 2020, the Commission presented the new EU cybersecurity strategy, a key component of the communication Building Europe's Digital Future, the Recovery Plan for Europe and the European Security Strategy, with the aim of strengthening Europe's collective resilience against cyber threats and helping to ensure that all citizens and businesses can fully benefit from digital and reliable services and tools while maintaining an open, stable and secure cyberspace. The aim of this thematic debate is to deepen some of these elements with the contribution of two highly respected experts. Mr. Edvardis Silaris, head of Europol's European Cybercrime Centre, and Mr. Pedro Verdalho, coordinator of the Cybercrime Office of the Public Prosecutor's Office. I am passing the floor to Mr. López Aguilar to moderate this panel.
Muito obrigado. Isabel. Now, the point is precisely cybersecurity on the rise, as cybercriminality has been on the rise. Wow. It's been on the rise, all right, throughout the pandemic, throughout the COVID crisis, COVID-19 showing cybercrime much in the increase, including many forms of attacks, online scams, identity thefts, disinformation campaigns, child sexual abuse, online hacking attacks against critical infrastructure, including hospitals, nothing less. Public health at stake as a consequence. So European Parliament's resolution in December 2020, EU Security Union strategy stressed new and evolving technologies permeate all aspects of security, creating new security challenges and threats. So this resolution highlighted the importance of secured critical infrastructures, including digital and communication infrastructures. That is why we are having here the possibility to debate this topic with experts and discuss the work of Europol in this field and challenge for the future. I'm giving now the floor to members of the GPSG right after the presentations we are about to hear from Mr. Silaris and Mr. Verdejo. Edvardis Silaris is head of the European Cybercrime Centre at Europol. And then we will be hearing by Mr. Pedro Verdejo, who is the coordinator of Cybercrime Office, the Portuguese Prosecutor General's Office. Then we'll proceed to the exchange of views. So be ready for it, all of you willing to be part of the discussion. Send signal. There is a way to raise hands. Make yourself noticeable. We thank you for that. But first of all, as I said, we'll give for 5 minutes each. No, excuse me, 10 minutes each. 10 minutes each. Yes, 10 minutes. And then, having the discussion, they will have a second round for answers after having heard the questions being raised. But first, 10 minutes each. First floor goes to Mr. Edvardis Silaris, Cybercrime Centre, Europol. Floor is yours.
Good afternoon. I hope you can hear me.
We can hear you, but we do not see you. If you can
Sorry.
Bring your device so that we may see you too.
One moment. It will help. One moment. It seems that we have some technical issues.
The technical issues. Can you fix it?
I hope so. Within 1 minute, probably.
Okay. We'll be patient.
Thank you. It's digital resilience, right to the top of our discussion point.
Just beware of being hacked. You let us know when you think you're ready to go, because we are waiting, simply. Okay, I have been suggested maybe we could hear first from Mr. Verdejo. If Verdejo is ready to go, Prosecutor General, Portuguese Prosecutor General's Office, Pedro Verdejo.
Yes, I'm ready.
Ready to go, and then we will be hearing from Mr. Silleris as he can fix his device so that we can only change the order. But later on, if Mr. Silleris managed to be seen, not only heard of, but also seen, that'll help. Would you be ready, Mr. Verdejo? Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, but we do not see you either.
It seems to be a pattern. It seems to be a pattern. You cannot
press the camera button. Oh, now we hear you, yes, and see you. So, okay. Pedro Verdejo, you go first, and then we will be hearing from Mr. Silleris. You go first.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Obrigado. Muito boa tarde. Boa tarde a todos.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Good afternoon to all. Warm greetings from Lisbon. I wish you all, in these challenging times, patience and hope. And I'd like to thank the Portuguese Parliament for the invitation to the Public Prosecutor's Office in Portugal to be here. It's not a mere formal thanks. This presentation allows me to show to high instances of the European Parliament and Europol the difficulties of criminal investigation in the Public Prosecutor's Office in Portugal and these difficulties that we feel on a daily basis. I'd like you to show my presentation. Within these topics, cybercrime and cyber resilience, I call my presentation, or I started my presentation with a question. Cybercrime. One of the co-chairs said this already, cybercrime has increased during the pandemic. It's a threat. We don't know if our system has been hacked, but we know for sure that cybercrime exists in newspapers, in headlines, in the media. It exists in real life, but it's very difficult to prove in court. It's very difficult to collect evidence that a crime has been committed, a crime against concrete victims. And the first difficulty of those investigating cybercrime is that all cybercrime is global. Internet rendered these activities global. I'm looking at the EP Parliament in Strasbourg. Other people are watching us throughout Europe, so we're everywhere. It would be the same to be here in Parliament or at home or in every place in Europe. It means that criminals are everywhere. They can be everywhere.
Começa a investigar, damos-nos conta desta primeira nuance. Não existe já um local onde ocorra um crime. Todos os crimes...
There is no location where a crime is. Digital crimes require evidence beyond the borders, research, criminal investigation beyond borders, and this crime is more global. So there are internet services across the countries that you use. We probably use for our personal life email services which are not hosted in our country, they're hosted in another country, in another continent, namely outside the EU. And the first big difficulty when investigating cybercrime is the same anxiety and same difficulties that Wim Wenders, the German filmmaker, called made his film. And those investigating know that most of the cases require transborder cooperation. They require formal requests for international cooperation. The international cooperation system does not resist to this type of requests, so we're going to be left without ability to respond.
O que quer dizer que temos de procurar outras soluções.
Means that we have to find other solutions with the ability of institutions to cooperate in a formal way. Penalties are still there. The goals will take place. And the problem that each public prosecutor or each policeman or each judge or public prosecutor, when he starts investigating cybercrime, the problem is how I'm going to start the investigation. I'm going to ask for international cooperation. Concrete example, somebody who has an account on a social network based, for example, in the United States. They commit a crime through that social network. So the question the prosecutor asks is, where do I start? Am I going to start by asking police cooperation, judicial cooperation from the United States, or am I going to try and find information elsewhere? It's not easy to answer this question because I just wanted to underline that we have several countries amongst the European Union countries that already have legal standards to solve those problems. Others don't. Some are in conflict, namely with standards from third countries outside the EU. So this is a problem that exists.
Numa dificuldade prática, operativa, e que suscita também questões difíceis de direito. Quando procurador começa a investigar, tem desde logo esta dificuldade. Onde está a prova que eu procuro, que eu tenho que reunir para investigar crime?
Where is the evidence that I have to collect?
Where's the evidence that I have tried to collect?
Condições para poderem ver. Pus no ecrã cartoon, livro infantil. Que...
I have this Where's Wally, and I can show you the difficulty that we have today in investigating crimes that take place on the internet. It's not only due to technological difficulties, it's because evidence is spread throughout the world, because the internet is throughout the world. And based on this, which is a problem for us, because the evidence is spread throughout the world, we have decisions, judicial decisions, namely from USA courts, that recognize this volatility of evidence, i.e. that evidence is nowhere. The decision, which you can see, is a court decision from the United States that recognized, this is a court decision that recognized that the evidence arising from messages on email, which technically is spread throughout the world, it's not possible that in a certain point in time, say where that evidence is, it's not possible to know where it is. And this is a major operator from the internet, Google, that stated this in court, and the appeal court accepted this position. So there's a court decision that recognizes that evidence is spread everywhere. How do we react to this situation? Now, this is a joke. I can share with you these photographs from my childhood times. John Wayne, John Ford, as you know, and other monsters of cinema, which were my heroes when I was a child. That's not the point now, obviously, but it's to show you that just like John Wayne, when he was a sheriff, a marshal, arrived at the border of Rio Grande and said, wait, we can't continue because this is where our state ends. I have no further jurisdiction. Now it's going to be the sheriff in the next state who has to investigate. And why? Because of questions of jurisdiction, because the law didn't give him legitimacy to investigate on the other side of the river in another state. Now, to collect digital evidence, we are exactly in the same situation. We have exactly the same rules. The legal systems continue to live as in the past, restricted to physical location of the authorities that are carrying out the investigation, physical location of criminals given the borders that exist. No prosecutor, no judge, or no policeman believes that he will go to another country to chase criminals, with some exceptions under international treaties with some countries. But without those exceptions, nobody's going to chase criminals cross-border. So the evidence and the criminals are everywhere now. And there's no way of making cooperation work at an international level. We live in the new world with new challenges without new tools to face these challenges. And it's very often that cases cannot be investigated because of legal barriers, because of problems of jurisdiction. We need to think about finding new criteria. And I'm just talking about evidence that we know where it exists. We know that on servers on the internet, we know that service provides services. I'm not talking about the hidden evidence, which is in servers of suppliers, the global suppliers of internet services. And believe me, we're not going to solve this problem if we don't change the paradigm. Ask each one of you if you can answer this question. Every time you post a comment or a photo on a social network, where is it physically? Where is the photograph? Where is that post? Every time that you upload that post, where does it go to? To which computer does it go to? If you search the headquarters of Facebook, you will see that they have their premises in California, head office in the United States, but Facebook informs publicly that the information which is uploaded onto their Facebook service by European clients goes to a server in Sweden, I believe, somewhere where it's colder and so servers cool off faster. But what does the public prosecutor do when he needs this information? Does he ask for judicial cooperation from California or to Sweden or to Ireland where they have an office representing Facebook? To whom do I have to ask a formal request to get that information? And I'm forgetting a gigantic problem, which goes hand in hand, which is the problem that happens when we don't know where the information is. In the dark web, for example, it's hidden, it's incognito, and it's put there on purpose. It's done to be incognito, and it's on purpose that we don't know where it is, because those who have that information don't want us to know where it is. And the difficulty here is much worse. The difficulty means that we're completely at a loss. We don't know who to ask cooperation from. Some positive friends, and this is where I leave you with an idea. Representatives of the national parliaments and distinct members of the European Parliament, I'll leave you with this thought, because each one of you can help me in terms of the political decision to be taken. There have been recent trends which I register positively. The European Order for Investigation, which has worked, which has allowed for some cooperation, but naturally it is restricted to the European space. And digital evidence is spread throughout the world. I would say it's more outside Europe than it is in Europe, even when it refers to facts which occur in Europe and to citizens of the European Union. There's another change, recent change, because it's 2-3 years old, which is the e-evidence initiative, the e-evidence package initiative of the European Commission, discussed with the Council and analyzed by the European Parliament, which at the time when we hold the presidency of the Council, we will obviously see things happening in the next few months in this field. And there's been another change also, which hasn't been published yet. It's still being discussed, final stages of the future second protocol to the Convention of Budapest, which we hope to bring more aggressive ways of investigating cross-border events, and that way allowing the member states to investigate with more efficiency. As regards the initiative, the e-evidence package,
antes, se não estou em erro, agora houve sinais de
So there have been some signs of a differentiated analysis between the different institutions of the EU. It means that we are somehow uncertain in view of the final results, and thus this does not give us reason for optimism. And I'm saying I'm not optimistic, and I'm challenging the European Parliament to instill some notes of optimism. And I would like to make this challenge as a EU citizen. I'd love to have a good outcome from this discussion, but the MEPs know better than I do what has to be done in this regard. Anyhow, in general, I would say that
ferramentas que vamos ter conjugada com
tools we will have together with the European Order of Investigation, with the second additional protocol to Budapest Convention, which will be very important in a very short-term basis. We hope that in February we will have some results disseminated. It will move into more modern ways of investigating, respecting fundamental rights, human rights, which are fundamental within the framework of the EU, but also with some technical efficacy. I believe that it is possible without giving up the fundamental rights of the Charter, including the data protection rights. We can follow some more incisive investigation routes that allow authorities to truly investigate, and having no ways of producing e-evidence. Thank you very much for having heard my intervention. I will reply any questions that you'd like to put later on. Thank you very much, Mr. Vitello, for your great examples of John Wayne, Frank Sinatra. Although they're not European, but it's great.
Edvarda Sileris, are you ready to go now? Did you fix it so that we can hear from you and see you both at the same time? Mr. Sileris?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry
yes,
for this.
Yes, crime on Europol. The floor is yours.
Sorry for these technical issues, and we have solved it, and luckily we haven't been hacked, so it's good thing. So, dear members of parliament, dear colleagues, it's honor for me to speak in front of you. Actually, it's first time. I'm newcomer at Europol. I joined Europol only from July next year, July 2020, actually, so a little bit more than 6 months right now. And before that, I was working in the National Police of Lithuania. So right now I have unique possibility to compare national police authorities and law enforcement within European Union. So actually it was really good, and all the time to receive proper support from Europol at national level. And right now my primary task is to support member states from here. So as our executive director stated, with some unique support from Europol, it would be impossible to deliver such good technical and operational support to our member states. And for example, the last success in cyber cyber-dependent crime area was EncroChat, and without possibilities what we have here at Europol, and without proper cooperation and proper sharing of information, it would be really a challenge to overcome all these issues. So right now we have topic of cyber resilience and cyber crime. And yes, as my previous previous speaker from Portugal stated, actually it's new rules, new environment, and for that reason we need to agree how we will work in digital era, because no matter that many cases there are similar legal things and issues and regulations, sometimes it's not easy, so it's not so easy to obtain necessary evidences and to share and to respond to cyber threats right on the time. Situation related to cybercrime in general. Actually, we stated in our Internet Organized Crime Threat Assessment 2020 that it's rather evolution, not a revolution. But I would give a comparison to car. It's a car, but actually it was not such car what we had in the past. Right now it's Tesla, much faster, much more energy efficient, and with much wider possibilities. So ransomware, we think that it's number one threat what we have right now in cyber area. And because of more or less everything right is digital connected, and to have possibility to lock digitally your internal network or your internal software, it causes some really big challenges for private industry as well as for government. So our last operation, joint operation with member states and also with some third countries related to botnet Emotet, actually it has significant effect to 30% of all malicious software all around the internet. But of course, it's a really complicated investigation, and it's impossible to run it within one member state. So ransomware is increasing, and we see more and more ransom requests to industry. And according to Chain Analysis, this is private Bitcoin tracing company, they announced that during last year it was approximately 10 billion of ransom pays within Bitcoins. Actually, it's a huge amount of money. Also, second area of priority is child sexual exploitation online. It's also during this COVID times, the number of referrals increased, and we saw a clear increase in this area. And we welcome last proposal from European Commission to further ask from private companies to report on possible exchange of this content to law enforcement, because without it, we will face some real huge problems. Next area is payment fraud. It's traditional, it's area of cybercrime. It's it was from the beginning, but right now it's more or less everything to business email compromised, fraud investment or non-cash payment. Actually, it's less and less this physical presence, but more and more digital interconnected using of some hidden services, and was really problematic for law enforcement to detect it and, of course, to prosecute in a proper way. Dark web also area without, I would say, without an end. Every year we see some dark markets, and after that we see new ones, and this all the time is some kind of game between mouse and cat. And of course, social engineering and cryptocurrencies is crucial. It's sometimes it's not so easy to hack to obtain in digital way evidence, not evidences, but private information or information what is really of interest of criminals. But in many cases, with simple social engineering, with predicting or with information what is publicly available on social networks, on different advertising, it's really easy for criminals to obtain this information, and with good mixtures of social engineering capabilities, they are able to obtain a huge amount of money and intervene to private life of citizens. Regarding EC3, European Cybercrime Center, last year we supported more than 400 high priority cases all around the European Union. And with some, right now I can give some examples of success from our side. Is we run 8 virtual victim identification task force. It was extended not only within European Union, but it was global, with support of Interpol and some other third countries as well. And we were able to identify victims from material provided towards to us from NCMEC. Also, in December 2020, we were able to take down illegal safe internet service used by criminals. Especially, it was anonymous, and for many of them, it was advertising that it's 100%. You get 100% of anonymity through the services. Also, this anchor chat investigation, also some regular activities which were affected by COVID, but we still were able to conduct them. For example, European Money Mule Action Day, and within this 1 week, we were able to prevent 35 million euros of losses for financial industries as well. Also, regarding cyber resilience, it's crucial to say that cooperation between private parties and law enforcement is crucial, and for that reason, we here at Europol, we have advisory groups, mainly consist of financial sectors specialists, internet security companies, or internet service providers. So for that reason, actually, this unique mixture of competences is really good advisor for law enforcement, how to react, how to find new proactive and innovative solutions in this area. Because as a prosecutor from Portugal stated, it's really a challenge in many cases how to react properly. And finally, what is our main advices or conclusions? It's information sharing is crucial, and without it, it's impossible. And in many cases, it's not only about regulation or additional power, but about goodwillness from different parties. Prevention and awareness in many cases related to ransomware or many other cybercrime areas is more than 99% you can prevent with when you really understand phenomena and you able to react in proper way. Otherwise, actually, sometimes it's too late. Legal framework is really crucial of importance from law enforcement perspective, and for that reason, we need to discuss, we need to write, to find the right balance between privacy, we need to respect privacy, but from other hands, we need to find good proper tools how to react properly from law enforcement side. And of course, capacity buildings. Sometimes we have this imagination that law enforcement officers must be strong, must be physically active, but in cyber area is completely opposite. Actually, you need to be really good with coding, with understanding how network works and what are possibilities for law enforcement. So it's more or less, this is it from my side, and I would be happy to answer all the questions that you would have.
Thank you, Mr. Sileris. We're glad you made it. And we made it too, to get to hear you and see you all right. So it is now time for discussion. If you allow me, Isabel, I will get started with the list of members of the European Parliament and the national parliaments which are listed to take the floor, and I will be announcing them as to the debate we're about to start. The first floor would go to Ludovic Haye from France, the Senat de France, and it'll be ready for Mr. Nick Preville from Slovenia. Okay, Monsieur Haye, vous avez la parole.
Mr. Haye, you have the floor.
Il faut premier le bouton, speak button, and the camera.
Là, vous m'entendez?
Maintenant, c'est prêt.
C'est prêt.
Hear me? Yes, good. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, Ms. Co-Chair. Thank you very much to give me the opportunity to speak about a very important topic, such as cyber crime and digital resilience. I'll try not to speak very quickly, and I'd like to thank all of those working in interpretation, which do an excellent work, and they are not always recognized. The strong growth of cybercrime is a threat to the European Union and its member states. Its forms are varied, and its consequences are potentially very serious. The role of Europol and its European Cybercrime Centre is central to the fight against these cross-border phenomena. The French Senate has, moreover, legitimately stressed this. The strengthening of Europol's action in this area requires several conditions, such as a better supply by the member states of its databases with complete and quality information, the extension of the scope of competence of the EU IRU Internet Referrals Units to the reporting of all online legal content, and adopting the European Legal Content Databases IRMA. Accordingly, developing a platform for reporting fraudulent bank transactions, supporting the creation of a national victim assistance schemes and their networking, and finally developing digital security training. The fight against cybercrime also requires an effective international cooperation to promote the security and stability of cyberspace. From this point of view, relations between the EU and the Council of Europe would benefit from being deepened while respecting, of course, their respective mandates. I'd also like us to support the work of the European Cybersecurity Agency, ENISA, in setting up a European certification framework for cybersecurity. However, this agency should undoubtedly strengthen its operational cooperation with national law enforcement and judicial authorities. French Senate has recently made an interesting proposal based on a twofold observation. The first is that the territoriality of criminal law is still too often an obstacle to prosecution, particularly when cybercrimes involve several member states. Second, cyberspace is borderless, which poses a challenge for law enforcement and judicial authorities in terms of criminal investigation and prosecutions with a high risk of impunity. As my colleagues mentioned before, therefore, the European Union must organize itself to prosecute cybercriminals more effectively. The French Senate has asked for an in-depth reflection on extending the scope of competence of the European Public Prosecutor's Office in the fight against cybercrime. Naturally, such a development requires several conditions to be met. Nevertheless, centralizing the handling of cross-border cybercrime cases at the EPPO would allow greater integration of the functioning of the European Union in the face of growing threats. I'd like to know how the European institutions welcome this proposal. Thank you very much for your attention. Thank you very much, Mr. I. I'm going to pass the floor to Mr. Prabil from Slovenia, and then Axel Voss from the European Parliament will be next.
Thank you very much, my dear colleagues at the JPSG. I will try to be brief because this is a very important and large topic. The rapid development of information technologies brings new forms of crime that require law enforcement agencies to adapt their work in order to sufficiently detect and prosecute such crimes. This type of crime has a cross-border dimension and it's highly sophisticated, making it difficult for individual countries to tackle this challenge or on their own. So investigation of such crimes requires different approaches, more effective legislation and international cooperation. better training and also the equipment of prevention, detection and law enforcement agencies, and additional staff, of course, to fight against the cybercrime. But all these can be achieved through effective and close cooperation, which must primarily include a safe and rapid exchange of information, knowledge, experience, and investigative tactics and methods. Such cooperation allows us, upon identification of common interests, to share knowledge and experience. In cyberspace, you know, criminals are technically severe, better organized than us, operating even more internationally, and it is therefore important to strengthen this so-called cooperation between countries and become even more actively involved in Europol's, Interpol's, and Council of Europe's projects related to cybercrime. Lately, the most cybercrimes have a single motive. This is a financial profit. But what if tomorrow the greatest motive becomes the information, not the money? How do we tackle this? And there has also been a huge expansion of virtual currencies and the dark web, which makes the investigation of such crimes very difficult. We are also witnessing the absence of mandatory retention of data in line with the rulings of the Court of Justice. And let me be here clear, this group supervises Europol, so the democratic work of Europol is essential, as well the data protection regarding its process and storage. To conclude, cybercrime today maybe can be just someone's problem, but tomorrow it can become everybody's problem. So the main goal is to work together even more and to strengthen digital resilience. Main question still remains how to efficiently and effectively achieve this and what does it take? So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Preville. Axel Voss, Mitglied des Europäisches Parlaments. And then it'll be Fabiola Cardoso, Portugal, Assemblea de la República.
Vielen Dank, Herr Vorsitzender.
So, thank you very much. Hello to everybody. A few smaller questions from my part. First of all, regarding evidence. Do you think that we need different approaches? With the e-evidence proposal, we have a proposal on the table. That was complicated enough to push it ahead. But is that sufficient or do we need more? Secondly, cooperation with private online services and private companies. Pleasing to hear that that's working well. But maybe for operational business, we need to have better or different legal bases so that we have a firmer footing for this. And then a further question. In standardization, standard setting for procedures, is there anything where you would say, okay, here we need to do certain things in the evidence side of things, or in processing requests, do we need to take a more standardized approach? But do we need to think ahead on the technological side of things so that we can work preventively on the standard setting side with regard to exchanging information, for example, and that we could achieve better results in evidence gathering? Of course, data retention leads to results that can be exchanged. And I would like to know, are there any measures where we can make improvements or are there no issues in this regard whatsoever? Thank you.
Thank you. Now it's Fabiola Cardoso de Portugal. Poi dopo viene Honorable Caterina Chinnici del Parlamento Europeo.
So first I'm going to pass the floor to Fabiola Cardoso and then to Caterina Chinnici from the European Parliament. Good afternoon. I'd like to greet all participants in this meeting from Lisbon to Europe. I'd like to thank all the work and the very interesting presentations made. the scrupulous respect of human rights, including data protection, have to be guaranteed in European cyber security strategies. It's clear the growing need in view of the accelerated digitalization caused by COVID-19 to prevent, deter, and act against cybercrime, including using cooperation strategies and AI. But let us not forget the basics. It's needed to guarantee freedom of access to internet, in safety and freedom, namely to all children and youth in school age, which is not the case in Portugal and in other EU member states. In view of the advance of new types of organized crime, which know no borders and are beyond jurisdictions, new solutions are required at European scale, but neither the combat to fake news, including by those disseminated by extreme groups, far-right groups, nor the constant struggle against child sex abuse will deviate us from the certainty that only guaranteeing the right to data protection and the scrupulous defense of human rights will we win this challenge. Only in democratic freedom will we be safe, online and offline. So I'd like to ask, what are the main operational strategies, human resources, financial resources and others, which are currently being used to guarantee the rigorous compliance to fundamental rights in building the European digital resilience in view of cyber crimes? Can we be optimistic in our ability to strike a balance between freedom and security? Thank you. Thank you very much, Fabiola Cardosa. Now I'm passing the floor to Catarina Chinici from the European Parliament and then Marietta Caramanlis from the French Assemblée Nationale.
Prego Caterina di portare via gli auricolari perché non ti sentiamo ancora, non ti sentiamo. Devi portare via gli auricolari così ti possiamo sentire.
Take off your earphones because we can hear you, but we can see you but we can't hear you.
Good afternoon President.
Adesso, can you adesso hear ti me? Sentiamo e ti vediamo.
Dicono al segretariato cosa? Ok, can you hear me now? Ok?
Yes, we can.
Sì, ti sentiamo.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair. And I want to thank all the two panelists for their presentation and the work they do in fighting cybercrime. We know how organized crime is increasingly exploiting the possibilities offered by new technologies to commit crimes and launder money from illegal activities. The use of these technologies, and in particular encryption, pose significant technical and operational challenges for law enforcement in identifying and prosecuting offenders. The challenges, however, are not only technical, but also legislative, and it's necessary to avoid the gaps in the European legal system. So I want to ask our panelists, which are the specific areas where there is a legal gap that need to be filled? But a particular aspect of information crime is its natural ability to easily cross the border of the state and often of the continent. We know, in fact, that some crimes can be committed by exploiting a server and the connection in remote countries. So I would like to ask, what is the level of cooperation between third countries? Do your investigation indicate that there are countries with which closer cooperation would be necessary? And to conclude, I'd like to ask about child abuse online and child pornography. The numbers, unfortunately, tell us that online crimes involving children continue to grow, and this trend is constant over the years. For an effective contrast to this kind of crime, I think that the cooperation between private companies that manage servers is of a fundamental importance. Can you give us an account of what are the collaboration you have with the private sector in this specific field, and what are the points in which we need to improve in order to curb this type of crime that is constantly increasing? Thank you. Thank you so much.
Grazie, Caterina.
Thank you very much, Caterina. Now we're going to give the floor to Marietta Caramanli from the French Assemblée Nationale, and then David Pariente from Spain. Can you hear me? Yes. Hello, thank you very much. Thank you for initiative, and thank you to the two previous speakers on this topic, which is so important. I have two questions. The Europol's note on cyber crime and digital resilience refers to a network of communications based upon AI, which will be, and I quote, a true network for cybersecurity, able to detect cyber attack signals in advance and to initiate proactive action. Could you please give us more details on the organization and the means employed within this network? Is it a existing coordination of means? The AI used are a partnership between private and public labs. And final, cyber resilience is defined as an approach between the strategy of response and as an organization of different dimensions. So the cyber crime can be public and private. So could you tell us specifically what means the synchronized partners and resources? Thank you very much for your replies in advance. Thank you very much, Mrs. Caramanlis. Now passing the floor to David Pariente. And afterwards, we will be listening to Patrick Breyer from the EU Parliament.
Señor Serrada, adelante.
Mr. Serrada, you have the floor.
Señor Serrada, la acabamos de ver. Tiene la palabra.
¿Se me escucha ahora?
¿Me oyes ahora? Can you hear me? Yes, we can hear you.
Bien. Yes, we can hear you and see you.
Darme la palabra. Y la verdad que para mí, como representante del Parlamento Español, pues...
Thank you very much as a representative of...
It is an honor to be able to take part in this discussion, and I would like to convey a message of congratulations to our brothers, the Portuguese people, in such a complex moment for our brothers in this peninsula. And indeed, they have just held elections a few days ago, which conveys a very important message for all the members of the Union, and more particularly for all those of us who are devoted to politics. And that is that in this time of uncertainty, so many threats we are facing now, to be able to convey a message of calm and convey to our citizens that institutions are still there and that democratic systems continue to function, that is something indeed that we have to take into account. It's been a Portuguese colleague who has posed a fundamental question when it comes to cybercrime and cyber attacks, and that is fake news. I believe that we could all be we could all agree that there has been a turning point when it comes to cyber attacks, and that is the COVID period, these exceptional times we are living in all European countries with lockdowns, with an important increase of these attacks. In this sense, I believe that the Portuguese rapporteur has conveyed the need that we all must be able to have a legal framework so that our countries can fight these attacks. Because at the end of the day, we're speaking about attacks against our democratic systems, and we're speaking about people who are trying to destabilize national and European institutions. In this sense, we must try and find this legal framework, this common strategy. And my question then would be the following, and that is, what can we do? What can be done from European institutions? Which strategy could be drafted? Which specific measures could be drafted in order to put an end to an essential problem, which is related to the discussion between how to preserve our fundamental rights, which are enshrined in all our constitutions, such as the freedom of expressions, and the type of messages, such as fake messages, who aim to destabilize our democratic systems.
Und jetzt willkommen zum Patrick Breyer, des Europäischen Parlament, und danach Susan Mittag, Bundestag Deutschlands, werden kommen. Patrick.
Thank you very much, Chair. I have the following four questions to our experts. Firstly, regarding the prevention of cybercrime, where ordinary citizens are concerned, cybercrime often seems to be a result of carelessness by citizens who are often not educated about even simple precautions that are needed online. And so what is your idea to increase awareness? Would it make sense, for example, to distribute a guidance with every IT device that is sold, or what are your ideas here? Secondly, on the issue of encryption, the EU Commission has committed not to consider any political solutions that generally weaken, directly or indirectly ban for all citizens, such as through the introduction of backdoors encryption. So does Europol support this political decision, and what does it imply for your work? Thirdly, regarding identity theft, it seems that there are so many databases of customers and users at large on the internet, and so easy to access details for identity theft, that it really makes me wonder, isn't the anonymous use of digital services the best way to prevent identity theft effectively, like not providing details in the first place? Because we are discussing this politically in the context of the Digital Services Act, I would be interested in your expert opinion on this. And finally, on the issue of child sexual abuse, when investigating this horrific crime, law enforcement agencies often seem to be overloaded, for example, with the large amounts of confiscated data that needs to be checked and screened, but also with the flood of machine-generated referrals from US internet platforms, of which there are millions. And now, in a situation where resources are limited and not everything can be done, what is your advice to law enforcement agencies on how to prioritize? So what work would, in your opinion, have the highest priority, and what kind of work would have lower priority? Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. Jetzt Susan Mittag, der Deutsche Bundestag. And right after, it'll be Elias Mirianthus, Cyprus. Susan, Sie haben das Wort. Frau Mittag.
Well, we can be pleased that we have this technology, because if we didn't have these technologies, we wouldn't have this sort of session at all. I have a question to Mr. Cileras with regard to crimes against critical infrastructure. Are you just focusing on COVID here, or are you focusing on other areas? SIM swapping, another issue. Unauthorized swapping of SIM cards, obtaining details via this method. Are all EU members affected by this, and could we have European rules to prevent it? Another issue was the sale of counterfeits, hygiene, sanitary products, PPE. Were all countries affected by this? Are there certain countries that were more affected? Were certain public authorities or infrastructures more affected? And what were the impacts? Did this impact just certain countries, or were more affected? Financial trails and channels. There was an action against money mules, an annual one, and I'd be interested to know what the developments were there. Did the money mule issue affect specific countries, or were all countries affected? Is this something, money mules, is this something that's on the up despite the growth of virtual currencies, or is this remaining on a stable level?
To Cyprus, and it'll be right after Tibor Bana, Hungary. Mr. Mirianthus.
Yes, good evening. In our turn, we would like to thank the presidency as well as the parliament for including this extremely topical issue item on the agenda of our meeting. It is an indisputable fact that the COVID-19 pandemic has pulled that the rise of the cybercrime all across Europe, especially with regard to child pornography content and online fraud. According to the Europol report of last October, cyber criminals took advantage of the pandemic in order to attack vulnerable segments of the population, like people who have just gone out of business, exposed enterprises or children, as they imposed lockdown from user to turn much more strongly to the internet. At this point, we would like to welcome the measures adopted recently by the Commission, the new strategy on cybersecurity, and the revised directive of security of network and information system, although with a delay. At the same time, due to the great need to mass vaccination of the population, many cyber criminals exploiting the fear and desire of citizens to secure the vaccines as quickly as possible spread via internet misleading information and fake news for the vaccine. For this reason, there is the urgent need to the development of mechanisms that prevent such phenomena. In addition, the increase of the amount of penalties regarding the relevant legislation framework could also be considered as deterrent for all those cyber criminals out there.
Thank you. Now it'll be Tibor Bana from Hungary, and next, danach Boris Pistorius, Deutsche Bundesrat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dear colleagues, most of the products and services are dependent on third-party solutions. This phenomenon is an opportunity to accelerate software and hardware developments in a cost-effective way. Every day, we utilize products and services based on the advantages of global supply chain. However, global supply chain has negative repercussions as well. During COVID-19, we have experienced how the global supply chain can affect our life if the physical delivery slows down. There are additional weak points when a client trusts a vendor to deliver something, incorporating the weaknesses of the supplier. If a vendor has a vulnerability, the cyber attackers can exploit their weaknesses on a global scale because of the rich interconnections of companies. Cyber criminals already turned their attention on attacking weaker supply chain elements like smaller companies with less compliance to cybersecurity requirements. The name of this attack type is supply chain attack. Our mission should be to help businesses in the European Union to correspond to the latest cybersecurity requirements. We can ask companies to review their suppliers before they sign a contract as a customer, while we can help them how to enhance their security as a supplier as well. Corporates should add new requirements to their supply chain ethical code to represent their dedication. I recommend starting a campaign to advertise the importance of trusted suppliers both for software and hardware. By this initiative, we can start planning the European standards of supply chain cybersecurity to set goals both for the supplier and for the customer members of a supply chain. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Herr Pistorius, Deutsche Bundesrat. Y se prepara luego Luis Gestoso de Miguel del Congreso de los Diputados de España. Herr Pistorius, Sie haben.
So, thank you very much, colleagues. I'm going to try and keep it short because we're running out of time. And I won't go into too much detail about the threat situation in the area of cybercrime, but there are two issues here. First of all, our daily lives are being transferred increasingly to cyberspace, and this shows how important it is for law enforcement agencies to work together. In January, there was the dark market case that was taken offline, and the infrastructure for Emotet was also broken up, and this was interrupted, and this shows how important it is to have coordinated efforts here. And I can assure you that, or I believe that, fighting cybercrime has to be right at the top of our agendas and remain there. What strategy has Europol been pursuing over the last few months to more effectively prevent or contain cyber attacks? And what can the member states do in specific terms to support Europol, or the other way around? For example, to prevent cyber attacks on vaccination infrastructure.
Señor Gestoso de Miguel, Congreso de los Diputados, and right after, Stefan van Hecke, Belgium, La Belgique. Señor Gestoso, por favor, tiene la palabra. Debe conectar su terminal, imagen y sonido. ¿Lo consigue? Nope. Bueno, señor Gestoso, si está usted en conexión, vamos a pasar ahora a el siguiente orador anunciado, Stefan van Hecke, y si consigue conectarse, regresaremos a usted en unos minutos. Stefan van Hecke, you've got the floor now from Belgium. Stefan van Hecke, Belgium House of Representatives, la Chambre des députés. Nope. Nope. No signal. No signal.
Signal y el señor Gestoso lo ha conseguido. Señor Gestoso, ¿lo ha conseguido usted? ¿Ha conseguido conectar su terminal?
Mr. Gestoso, are you able to connect?
Señor Gestoso, vemos su mano alzada en pantalla, pero no conseguimos verle ni oírle. No. Debe haber algún problema, según nos cuentan los servicios técnicos. Debe haber
technical problems with your
pulsar el botón
technical
cámara, el botón audio, connect, speak button, video button, the whole thing. Entonces, por favor, ¿qué tal Aude Bono Van Dom? Aude Bono Van
Dom. To listen to Aude Bono Van Dom from France, from the National Assembly. Can you hear me? Yes, yes, here you are. Yeah, it's great to see you. Dear colleague, cybercrime is a fight as a criminal infringement practice on the cyber scenario. This is a type of crime which is different from traditional crimes because it is located in virtual space, cyberspace, which is the challenge of our century. In 2019, we have seen more than 80,000 victims of the cyber crimes. So there is an increase of more than 200%, and these figures are very worrying. The victims, 92% are private persons, vulnerable, which are vulnerable in view of these threats. In 2020, when the presentation of the new strategy on cybersecurity, the European Commission has stated that this is one of its first priorities. The main goal is to strengthen collective resilience of Europe against cyber threats and contribute so that all citizens and businesses can benefit fully from digital services, making a stable and safe cyberspace. Last Friday, we had an evidence that the international cooperation is most effective to fight against cybercrime with dismantling of Emotec software. It's a very important event, and we should be pleased. And I'd like to thank here Europol and the European Center Against Cybercrimes, without which we could not have acted. So this gives us a strong signal of cybercrime, struggle against cybercrime by cybermen. It implies a very important strengthening of the judicial settings with the expert units from police authorities and magistrates. In fact, we don't have enough experts and they don't have enough budgets. So certain EU member states focus on cybercrime, the struggle against cybercrime. So this is why we have to be unified and to act together. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mrs. Bono Van Dom.
Greece. From Greece, Konstantinos Karakounis. Are you connected? And then it'll be maybe Vincenzo Garuti dell'Italia.
Now, Vincenzo Garuti from Italy. Mr. Karakis, are you there?
Thank you very much. Hear us? I hope you can hear me, says Mr. Karagounis. This is the interpreter. Since apparently I'm the last speaker, obviously, a lot of what I've been meaning to talk about has already been said, so I'm not going to reiterate, nor am I going to repeat the useful things that have been said so far and the remarks that have been made. But let me just say that for years now, experts have foreseen that humankind will be threatened by a number of risks and threats. A pandemic was foreseen somehow, and indeed it's happening, unfortunately. And then when it comes to a cyber attack, the generalized cyber attack, again, this is one of the major threats. That's why this session subject matter is critical, as is the case in many European member states. In Greece as well, we have had an ever-increasing number of cybercrime cases. And I can acquaint you with data from the Greek authorities. In most cases of cybercrime activity, the perpetrators in Greece have turned out to be operating outside the confines of Greece. Let me also highlight and insist on online sexual abuse of minors. In particular, the sexual abuse of children online is of particular concern to us all, as underscored by Europol in its report. And as underscored in the relevant documents drafted by Europol, children are spending more and more time online because of the pandemic, because of the lockdown and its restrictions. And so we have been facing an ever-increasing number of sexual abuse cases involving children. Perpetrators of such criminal activities regularly circulate online child pornography content and material. Gradually, this type of activity is shifting towards the dark web. And so children or minors, people who are underage, that is, are being pressed by people they either know or don't know to share content or to meet with people they've never met before in the real world. And I think this is really worrying. The fact that also breaches happen during Zoom sessions and discussions, all of that targeting young people, people underage, is true. So this is my question, and I know many colleagues are worried about it. My question is this: which specific actions and activities is Europol going to undertake in order to tackle such criminal activities and behaviors at the expense, especially of minors? Already AI has been mentioned. Training is important. Specific technologies and interventions are needed. What type are you going to use? Thank you.
Ευχαριστός, Mr. Karakounis. Adesso l'onorevole Garuti del Senato della Repubblica, and then it'll come
passing.
Belgium, Celia Grutete. But please,
Honorevole Grutete from Belgium and Garuti. You have the floor.
Thank you very much, co-chairs. Thank you very much, Mr. Shilleris, Mr. Vadeo, and thank you very much for your contributions. They were very interesting. As we have heard during the debate, during the pandemics, there was a significant surge in cyber crimes, particularly online trade fraud, phishing, smishing, ransomware, attacks on networks and systems, data breach, child pornography, illegal streaming. Cybercrime is becoming more and more aggressive, as shown by the latest report of IOCTA, also owing to the new vehicles of attack, social engineering, cryptocurrencies, ransomware and providers, DDoS attacks, Emotet. I would like to congratulate you for concluding the operation on to gain control of the infrastructure, managing and coordinating Emotet. In the preparatory documentation that I read for this meeting, I say, and I quote, that mention is made of development of operating capabilities for the purposes of prevention. May I just say that operating capabilities are not enough to combat cybercrime. In addition to this, we should have a heuristic approach through the introduction of instruments that can foresee future attacks like machine learning and AI in general. We need a predictive in addition to a reactive paradigm. The idea is not just the management of incident response, but also to prevent that this is done through prevention systems based on the creation of innovative and effective systems. I will wrap up by saying that the concept of automatic decision making and profiling in cybersecurity, in prediction oriented cybersecurity, must be carefully balanced against GDPR rules. So thank you very much for the opportunity and thank you very much for giving me the floor, sir.
Grazie a lei. Celine from Belgium, you got the floor. Oh,
now, Belgium, you have the floor.
Celia, are you there?
I'm right here. Hello, can you hear me?
Yep.
Thank you, Chess. Thank you, Mr. Vederio, Mr. Sileras, for your interesting presentations. You very clearly outlined how hard it is to tackle cybercrime, especially during the explosion of cybercrime during the pandemic. And as the colleague mentioned, with the threat of cybercrime rising, your calls to more international cooperation to eliminate unnecessary hurdles, to cooperate more efficiently are very justified. But as colleagues have outlined, the respect of personal and human rights of citizens is very crucial while we are doing this. I have two questions. The first one concerns the divulgence of personal images and videos. Many colleagues have talked about child abuse, but this can, of course, also implicate adults. And even when images or videos are consensually made, there is a large human dimension here, and it can have enormous implications for individual citizens, personally and professionally. You've mentioned how hard it is to get these images offline. You've also pointed out the technical difficulties. Now, the final outlets and tech companies that are divulging it can be a key player here to stop the spreading, to solve these crimes. And during the pandemic, you have made progress with certain providers and firms. They've agreed to scrutinize their images more carefully. But I'm wondering, how is this cooperation coming along here? Are you booking progress? Do you have enough leverage in regards to these big international firms to enforce human rights, or are you dependent upon their goodwill? And what do you see as necessary and opportune change there? Second, many colleagues have also touched upon disinformation. I'd like to add that the rapid development of deepfake makes it very easy to divulge fake information very broadly. And concerning disinformation during the pandemic especially, there has been a very strange development where the extreme right, and to a much lesser extent the extreme left, have united with groups that were previously democratic, embedded in society. And I'm wondering how you see it possible to counter the efforts of these extremizing groups that have really taken up speed, especially towards vulnerable groups, people who have been touched by the pandemic, and towards young people. Thank you.
Thank you, Celia. Quiero decir, antes de regresar a nuestros ponentes, que lamento mucho que Luis Estoso no haya podido conectar. Nos informan nuestros servicios técnicos que habría una...
I apologize for Gestoso, MP Gestoso, not being able to take part. So we invite him to submit his contribution in written form. We very much regret that we could not hear him.
To our guest speakers, I guess. To the guest speakers, first Mr. Sileras, and then it'll be Pedro Verdejo. First, Mr. Sileras, if you want to conclude 5 minutes, 5 minutes for Pedro Verdejo, and then I will turn also the floor for concluding remarks to our co-chair, Isabel Oneto, per las conclusiones de nuestra discusión. Now, Mr. Sileras, would you like to? Mr. Sileras?
Yes, yes, Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Actually, it's really hard to conclude everything within 5 minutes, but I will try. Actually, regarding legal gaps that we have, so actually there is proposal regarding Europol regulation, so improve cooperation with private parties and third countries. And I would like to mention that we have Schengen within European Union, so we need some kind of similar Schengen in area of cooperation, because right now sometimes it take days or months to exchange or to get information, and criminal react within seconds. Regarding prevention, I think that it's crucial of importance, prevention and awareness, and for that reason, educate societies, and we as Europol, we launch many prevention campaigns, and actually we try to translate our campaigns to all EU languages, at least, that the richness of audience would be better. Also, training capacities of law enforcement is crucial, because, as I said before, it's completely different policing with completely different rules. Related child sexual exploitation and how to prevent reaching of harm content. Actually, right now, it's fundamental thing that internet is not regulated. So without awareness and good guidance how to do it, I think that there are no technical solutions right now possible, because otherwise it will be against our fundamental things and rights. Related new ways how to investigate cybercrime. As I said, main thing is international cooperation, fast cooperation, and proper exchange. For example, in area of child sexual exploitation, we have excellent cooperation with US, and we exchange information in a very fast manner. Also, it was questions how Europol reacts towards this problematic situation. Actually, we support, our main role is support of member states. It's we don't have executive powers to react on our behalf. So for that reason, we try to deliver best knowledge, best information, and we share all the information what is relevant and which we have got before. Encryption. I think that law enforcement need to get lawful access to encryption, and I think that in all, more or less in all member states we have this right, but actually with implementation we have many issues, especially because ownership, as this was presented in the prosecutor's presentation, sometimes lays on private parties, not on law enforcement or government sector. So more or less, I think that I managed to do within 5 minutes, and all the rest questions I would be happy to share in written form with you. Thank you.
We thank you for that, because of course we understand the limitations that impose all of these circumstances due to the organizational aspects of this gathering, of this talk of us, including the interpretation cabin, whose patience I think we are exceeding. We thank you. I don't know. I see. So we thank you for that, for the interpreters, if they are sparing us some final additional minutes just to get it done, to get the job complete. Señor Verdejo, si quiere concluir en 5 minutos antes de retornar la palabra a nuestra copresidente.
Señor Verdejo, would you like to speak during 5 minutes on a personal note? Co-chairs, let me say how pleased I am for having participated in this debate. I see that the members of the different national parliaments and the members of the European Parliament are very much aware of these subjects. They've made very specific questions. They wanted to know how these questions are solved. And as a EU citizen, I'm very pleased. I'd like to start to answer a question by the Member of Parliament, Fabiola Cardoso from Portugal. Without a respect for human rights, including the right for data protection, which is another fundamental right, without it, it's not worthwhile working. Because if we what are doing to fight cybercrime does not respect the undeniable fundamental rights, nothing could be done. So it's clear that any legal instrument or other instrument will have to comply to the fundamental rights. In relation to Mr. Axel Voss, he asked if what exists is not enough. No, I'm afraid it's not sufficient. The means we have to investigate cybercrime, I don't even talk about operational resources, but the legislative means to investigate cybercrime are not sufficient. We require some improvements. Judicial cooperation has to be further improved. But we have to design new ways of finding evidence, collecting evidence, because the formal cooperation system cannot respond, on one hand, to all requests of information, from cross-border information requests, because any investigation requiring digital evidence is a cross-border investigation, and formal cross-border investigator was not designed to respond to all cases investigated. So we need, in some cases, to create ways of investigating without using these judicial international cooperation, but judicial cooperation for its very nature does not respond to the needs of obtaining e-evidence. E-evidence disappears in a second by pushing a button, and judicial cooperation takes a long time, as you know. Mr. Voss raised a question regarding global operators, the existing practice that you know, of course. There is a global practice, but it's unregulated, non-standardized. It depends on the goodwill of global operators, of the big internet providers. We have to regulate it, and we hope that from these regulations there will be the respect for fundamental rights, human rights, and data protection. Ms. Alex Voss touched upon another point, which is data retention. Without data, we can't investigate. There is a ongoing European discussion, which is quite difficult, creating a great deal of uncertainty, and which leads to failure in concrete investigation. This is discussion on data retention policy. It would be interesting that the European Union would tell us what is their option regarding data retention. The MEP, Katharina Kinichi, asked what is the gap. The gap is going further. Without giving up the scrupulous respect of human rights, we have to go further to such new instruments that are not just new ways of using old tools. We have to know what can be done with cross-border evidence in the context of the EU. The European Research Centre is a good starting point. What we need is to go further and beyond the European research decision. We have to create new, more effective ways of acting, also in relation to third countries. The EU regulations are valid for cooperation within the EU, but we know that most of the important servers are not hosted in the EU. Many of them are outside the EU, in third countries, not just the US, but in other countries. And there's a great deal of evidence in unknown places. In relation to Mr. Breyer, who mentioned training and knowledge, it is essential. This is a very important viewpoint. This is a final note because I believe it's more important than all the others. Prevention is always better and more effective to oppose these activities. Criminal activities make us investigate, but it's more important to prevent things from happening. We always have very limited resources, and I agree that in cybercrime there have to be an exceptional mobilization of resources because it's increasing enormously. Many of the members of parliament have mentioned the upsurge of cybercrime with the pandemic. It's true, but what is also true is after the peak of the pandemic was over, we had higher levels of cybercrime. They did not go up and down. They just decreased slightly, but they are much higher than before the pandemic. In the Public Prosecutor's Office, we calculated in December 2020, the cybercrime figures were the double of those figures before the pandemic. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Vedelho. Isabel, you have the final conclusions. Thank you very much, Lopez Aguilar. We have a very interesting discussion with very varied subjects. The difficulty in collecting evidence, the coordination with third countries, the coordination with private entities, treatment of fake news using AI, guarantee fundamental rights, and data, personal data protection. These are topics which will be in our minds for some time now. Tomorrow, well, we've not concluded our agenda, and tomorrow we will start at 9:30 a.m. We will be listening to the presentations by Ilse Johansson, the European Commissioner of Internal Affairs, and Ms. Eduard Cabrita, a Portuguese Minister of Internal Affairs. I thank you for your participation in this productive discussion. I would like you to remind you and ask you to connect, to be connected 45 minutes before the start of the session to guarantee the best possible connection and keep up this good functioning of this meeting. Good afternoon to you all.